Welcome to Mayor Ganem's greatest podcast on earth. I am librarian Andre Massa here with, of course, Mayor Ganem. We're going to officially dub this now the Fitzwillies Memorial Studios at the Bridgeport Public Library Beardsley branch. How are you doing today, Mayor Ganem?
Good, good. Does that make you the greatest librarian? Podcaster?
I would honestly like to think so.
Well, let's claim it and then let's see what happens. I don't know what Guinness and all those other authorities have to say.
We could claim it.
The Beardsleys, the Guinnesses. Who else were we talking about? But no, it's great to be here at the, I guess we're calling it the Beardsley, it's East Main Street Library. The old, what was the title of the location?
It was used to be Fitzwillies. I get that a ton. When people come in here, they'll be like, oh, this place used to be Fitzwillies.
It used to be Fitzwillies. And it was a place before that. I can't think of the name of it, but we used to come as kids for Thanksgiving dinner.
Didn't it used to be a Chinese buffet or something like that?
It might have been after, but this wasn't. This was just like turkey.
Wasn't it also a nightclub, too?
Wasn't that, was Fitzwillies a nightclub?
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, kind of. Fitzwillies was a
Oh, so Fitzwillies was the nightclub. I thought it was a nightclub, but then Fitzwillies was like one of those
burgers. Not of notoriety, like a nightclub like that. It was just a, regular place.
See, that's the thing,
and they had food, too.
So, like, for somebody like me, right, I live in Danbury. I was born there in Danbury. I lived in Danbury. I come to work in
Bridgeport. Someone like you or you.
Yeah, like, I always just get fascinated, I think, with how many different places this place, like, this used to be. Just as somebody that also worked here, too. So, like, they'll be like, this used to be the China buffet. We used to go all here all the time. Or we used to go to Fitzwillies and we used to have some fun time with the drinks and stuff like that. And I'll be like, well.
And throw a little bone out there, so to speak, to the zoo.
Oh, yeah.
Right across the street. Beardsley Park, Beardsley Zoo, the Park City, Seaside Park. So we're rolling it out. You talk about greatest. They really are. It's not only the state's only zoo. It's just really cool. And as is many things in the city that I know, maybe today, but certainly along the path of this continuous opportunity to join you for the greatest podcast, we're going to talk about a lot of the greatest things that I think and love in the city of Bridgeport.
So we have a couple questions that we want to ask you
questions.
Over here. Yeah, we have some questions.
So let's do some questions.
All right, so we want to actually talk about maybe like your accomplishments and the legacy that you think that you've left on Bridgeport, right? So when you look back at your time as mayor, what are three accomplishments you're most proud of, and why do these matter for Bridgeport's future?
Yeah, I mean, first, thanks. For me, this is kind of a, I don't say newer experience. We do a lot of talking into the microphone and TV and radio and video and all that. But with the opportunity for it to go on and maybe in too much detail, but to go on and on about some of the things you just asked and other stuff in the city is a moment of kind of reflection, just trying to think back. So for those that know and those that don't know, I'll kind of ramble out loud some of my thought processes. So I go back all the way to the early 90s with some of the things when you talk about legacy. And legacy is usually talked about when you're kind of finishing up. I don't really think I'm finishing up. I think we still have a lot to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a point in time, at least in my perspective of time, as it relates to the city of Bridgeport, modern city of Bridgeport, my tenure, legacy, or things that we've impacted. We're at a point where there's like a lot of really good stuff, for lack of a more eloquent way of saying economic development, waterfront development, housing starts, plummeting crime statistics, infrastructure improvements than there ever has been in I'm talking about in a compressed period of time. Even over a longer period of time, we haven't seen this. Some cities have these spurts, some places like anything else, we call it growth, where you're all the elements of your hard work, using a poor visual of like push starting a car up a hill. You just seem like there's visibly nothing to be seen. It doesn't feel like it's moving hard, and then all of a sudden it takes off. Bridgeport's got a piece of that going right now, probably most visibly along the waterfront. So circle all the way around. I think the visible stuff, because we've been able to establish the foundation both in the areas of safety, cleanliness, habitability, affordability. We're seeing the type of investment in the city that helps to lift it even more and has changed the entire perception and reality. And so that's been good. I mean, it goes blah, blah, blah. There's like three or four or five or six parts to the answer, which are, include all the other stuff with the amphitheater and the entertainment district and the rebranding of the city and people appreciating that.
So I've actually noticed that when I, sometimes when I actually go to my lunch, down on East Main Street, right? So I've actually noticed, I think, all of that development around, the waterfront area. Could you go into a little more detail about, people, residents of Bridgeport can expect, from around that area, the things that they might be able to do, the kinds of businesses that are moving in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I put stuff on a big pot, but if you think about it, just to stay on the waterfront for a minute, you've got visibly at this moment, I mean, you can get into smokestack, no smokestack, I don't mm-hmm. know how many listeners, are tuned on that, but that whole peninsula is the other half of the development of the largest waterfront development, not just in Connecticut. I'd go up to almost the entire eastern seaboard with that kind of exposure. And with the momentum that you have across, I guess they call it the August, which is the 400 units of waterfront housing going up as the first phase of over 1,000. I think it's 1,200 altogether. Right on that location,
wow.
You've got the decommissioning now. It's decommissioned more than 5 years ago, environmentally, of the last coal-burning plant in Connecticut, which was that site where the smokestack is, already coming down with implosions, and plans for develop some housing, some other mixed use. So you see that visual playing out. At the same time in the neighborhoods, I think one of the, if I had to answer tightly about what one of the things that I think is really important, it's been neighborhood by neighborhood. You'd have to go through each one. It was pointed out to remind me things like, something is terrible representing what the city was way back in the 90s that I was talking about was this pile of one block high pile of construction debris in the East End, dubbed nationally by national leaders as Mount Trashmore, and couldn't be moved. And when I became mayor at the time, there was no money. The city was actually the largest municipality in the country to file for municipal bankruptcy. So
I did
broke.
Hear about that.
It was broke. And so there wasn't even enough money, even if we wanted to do it on the public side, to say, hey, we have X amount of dollars to clean up this neighborhood, which
right.
was rat-infested. It was a symbol of decaying urban America. And that's why it got national attention, unfortunately, or fortunately. But ultimately, I got in, and we were able to get some state funding to get it moved. And, it takes a while. These things are, again, the push-starting car. Sometimes it feels like you push starting at a mile or for years, but that site now is transformed or transforming into hydroponics and allowing for a fresh vegetables to be grown and sold and distributed in the neighborhood. And what was, that term that we've heard too often over our lifetime is food deserts in some neighborhoods, fresh food deserts.
That must have taken a remarkable amount of work to be able
think
to
about
turn that
right?
around.
To remove that,
yeah.
And then to remediate the so it's environmentally clean enough to grow. And the hydroponics are above the ground. They grow
right.
in technically in water. But to be able to have that type of transformation of a urban neighborhood is again, it's not the entire city, but it's impactful. And when you can impact neighborhood by neighborhood, it makes a difference in quality of life.
That's interesting for somebody like me that lives in Danbury and comes to work in Bridgeport, right? Because for somebody like me in Danbury, I don't really get to see that rapid development and positive urbanization of a community like Bridgeport very easily. To me, it's a lot of us will still think of Bridgeport as being something that we envisioned of having the smokestacks and the old factories that aren't being abandoned anymore. But I for one, become impressed, I think, when I see something like the development of the waterfront property. And to hear about something like Mount Trashmore, right, and the amount of work that it took to really develop that from being something that a lot of people just wrote off and it might have even been a national joke to something that is now where people are able to grow vegetables and that it might actually be able to make a positive difference in this community. That is something that's
And there's
remarkable.
Ownership. There's personal citizen neighborhood ownership. And sometimes it's specifically over, let's say, this land or this transformation, but it's ownership in helping being part of the transformation that I think resonates and sometimes passes on literally to the next generation. Mm-hmm. We have marches, pictures of marches, you know, at all the big national leaders, and one of the families that's taken over and going to do the hydroponics, she's walking, Deb Sims, she's walking with her children who were, mm-hmm. you know, young kids at the time. So we look at those pictures, and you see the pile of debris. We marched for, you know, I remember the amount of, every Sunday after church for 26 or 30 or 40 or 50 until we knew it was going to, you know, get cleared. And during those weeks is when I got elected mayor. So it became my problem. As much as I was complaining, you guys should take it down, you guys should clean it up. I said, oops, I raised my right hand. Now I got to get rid of it. So we did, though. But there's ownership and there's legacy. Those children that are in the pictures are all grown now.
Yeah.
And so it's that kind of thing that, you know, is helpful. The overall focus, just to go on, because I started and usually start and finish with all those things are huge. But none of it would be possible if the city wasn't in reality safe and wasn't, and the perception of reality wasn't a stable one. And that's become huge, and I think it's bubbled to the top nationally and, you know, in circles where you see this past year, and you look at every annually, you look at statistics, you look at them daily, weekly, monthly, but yearly, and you see it continue plummeting, and it's been a five-year decline now, you know, over 60%, and the lowest in homicides and shootings in my lifetime. And, you know, always afraid to mention these because, you know, some of it we have impact on and we can identify whether it's hiring more officers, community policing, partnerships with neighborhood groups, economic development, better living commissions, more affordability. Those are all factors, but there's always factors beyond your control. So I'm always afraid, and one is too many. Mm-hmm. So you always want to make sure it's always work in progress. Every day is a new challenge. You start from, you know, you start hoping and working to make sure that you can prevent and certainly respond to anything that breaches the any of the areas of public safety, from police and fire, first responders, people's lives, and you know, Bridgeport, to digress a little bit, but I always want to remind people that as much as I care and focus, you know, we primarily on all of our residents, but youth. And youth opportunities and education, and we spend a whole section on that at one point. We'll get the superintendent in here, or others that are advocate for and can kind of enlighten us a little bit more. The public safety stuff is very, very much what I think is the cornerstone of seeing people come in for the amphitheater, wanting to buy waterfront housing along at the August at Steel Point, businesses opening. We always have more to do, but it's really important.
I think I also want to circle back to, like, the idea of legacy, too, because you did bring up something that was very important about, like, you know, photos of people being able to go out and safely enjoy Bridgeport, or people being able to go back to where Mount Trashmore used to be, actually. Like, and, you know, people would come after church and they would take pictures at an area that used to be, like, so terrible, right? A lot of people assume that legacy for politicians are things that can be quantifiable and measurable with, like, well, this person got rid of, like, $50 billion of debt or something like that, or this person gave, like, $65 billion of investment into the city. And while all of those are probably good and could be something that could be part of a legacy, I think that you bring up a very good point about maybe legacy is also the experiences that people have living in Bridgeport, too. People are now able to go out there and they're able to safely walk the streets of Bridgeport because they know that crime is plummeting, right? They're able to take those selfies with those families in front of all the landmarks that have been developed because of all the effort that has been put into Bridgeport, right? And I think that's something that's often underappreciated, especially when we're talking about things like with regards to local government, right? The decisions that we make at the local level, they're able to provide those moments for people in their cities and in their towns. And I think that's something that, you know, as somebody that's coming from Danbury, I'm shocked to honestly hear about all that. But that is something that would make me proud.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I agree. All those experiences when you hear and people say something that reminds you that that has changed, that a difference has been made, you know, whether you take credit for it or not, we deserve credit or not, or blame, whatever. You know, mayors always get too much blame and many would argue not enough credit. But, you know, there are things you put in place that have an impact. Very visibly, not to stay on crime, but you know that period when I talked about when I came in, when it was bankrupt and we couldn't have money to move Mount Trashmore, the police cars had holes in the floorboards, and you know it was the lowest manning levels, and we were talked about as the murder capital of New England, and all these things that I hate to bring up. We took our measures in our own hands because of the financial condition, and we needed to meet public safety demands. And we had gangs and all that kind of stuff in the city, is all too common across the country and around. But we used environmental design. We took these concrete structures called Jersey barriers that they use along the highway, you know what I'm talking about, to divide. And we rerouted traffic in neighborhoods where people were coming into the city, driving off of the highway 95, looping in and driving out. And there was a thriving drug market there. And we forced the traffic patterns to change. And as a result, the shootings went down, not to the levels they're at now, but making so the neighbors who you think would not want that in their neighborhood said, no, please put those in. We are at that point where we'd rather have Jersey barriers rerouting traffic in our neighborhood than worrying about shots fired or drugs being dealt. And so, you know, those are kind of challenges that are not probably other than a discussion like this would, and those that were there at the time would know is part of doing this now for, you know, again, since on and off since the early 90s. So one of the more, I don't know if this is flattering or not, but one of the longer serving mayors in the country, so most experienced, especially at a city this size, not the size of New York or L.A., but a larger city with all the mm-hmm. same problems and the largest city in Connecticut. And so, you know, it's hard when you start off the question, what are the three things? And I started to answer that question, forward thinking. We still need to create 5,000 more units of housing in the mm-hmm. city, affordable, workforce housing for seniors. City has one of the largest still active populations of seniors and persons with disabilities in that broad category of any place in the state. And affordability, you know, whether you talk about it on the national level, whether you banter it around politically, it means can you afford basically to live, to either own or rent a home, but live somewhere, have a roof over your head, and have food. And in a city that's, by comparison, so affordable to other communities in Connecticut, certainly in Fairfield County, it's still an uphill climb. And so government can make an impact on that. Cities can have an impact. We don't necessarily build our own housing, but we certainly foster a type of atmosphere, I hope, to help others invest and create. And sometimes we partner with them. So there's a lot more to do. I'm excited about it. They want to add more music venues. They want to continue the waterfront. We've got to double down on what we can expect out of public education if we don't invest more in it mm-hmm. as a state. You can't cherry pick and just say the state's doing great because we have so many school districts that have affluence that don't have either the special education or the multiple language challenges that you have in your major urban centers, especially in Bridgeport, speaking, I don't know what it is, 74 different language or variations of language in the schools, and make that commitment all the way through. And that's part of what I want to, you know, talk about legacies. One of the legacies I want to continue to fight for is that challenge on public education. Brought lawsuits against the state in the past on that, and you know, have fought, not only added millions of dollars to funding locally, but fought for more funding on a state and on a national level, because it makes a difference. Our teachers are underpaid. I'm the first to say it. Nobody has a tougher job. I mean, parents have tough jobs raising kids, but professionally, teachers have the lion's share of the challenges. I mean, nurses go in and save lives, and you know, episodic or responding to a tragedy or something. But teachers are day to day, and especially if you get in there. So you know, we have unsung heroes in many ways.
There's also a lot of unspoken work for teachers too, because it's not just the school they have to go through too. There's grading papers and there's field trips. This is work that can go well past like 5 or 6 p.m. when they're waking up at 6 in the morning to get their classrooms done. Or they might even be working on weekends grading papers too. And that's things that they're not getting paid for, but it's the work they're putting in because they care about our children.
Yep.
And I think that's something that a lot of people also like underappreciate, or it's something they don't see at all. All right, so Mr. Mayor, Bridgeport has seen major investments along the waterfront in housing, arts, and clean energy. Which project best represents the long-term vision you have for the city?
Yes, it centers around taking a moment to pause and remember, and for those that don't know Bridgeport, just give you just a quick, and you'll know as soon as I explain to you, we're the largest population in Connecticut along the waterfront, Long Island Sound. I know they want to rename it Bridgeport Sound, but we're going to leave it Long Island Sound for now. And it is about an hour from New York City and maybe 2 hours from Boston, just to put us in perspective. And it's an old industrial city. You know, some of the major companies that you know, from GE through typewriter companies to Singer sewing machines and so on, all were kind of headquartered or housed large facilities and factories in Bridgeport. So it was an industrial, it's called the arsenal democracy during World Wars, Remington and so on. So it has that, it was the, that's why people moved here. The jobs were great, the quality of life. Park City, still called the Park City because we have more public parks. Olmsted Design Parks, similar to what you see in the quality of Central Park or in our Beardsley and our Seaside Park, again, Olmsted Parks. Historically home to the P.T. Barnum Circus, which we treasure in the form of annual remembrance and parades, a great street parade around the 4th of July. So there's a lot of history in the city. But as the industrial elements of huge companies moved out of the Northeast over decades, starting, you know, you could say in the 70s or 80s, the cities were transformed, tax base changed, populations changed. So the redevelopment of that, we used to say, oh, we got all these old factory buildings, we're all being converted into housing or other uses now. It's transformed, and we've transformed the waterfront. We tore down the last coal-burning plant, the power plant, and now that has become units of beautiful waterfront housing and restaurants and one of the most, I think, spectacular marinas that you can see anywhere. And the other side's being developed as well. But that's more than just that water's edge. That connects the downtown. That connects to the amphitheater, the arena. You go down, you know, it's a jump in a different world, but you get down to Seaside Park and the University of Bridgeport. You talk about the whole South End, which is the waterfront of Bridgeport. And one of the beauties that, you know, cities would die to have our location, our waterfront, our Seaside Park, and all that goes with it. And then I-95 barreling through, the train comes right through. We have our own airport, which we're looking to develop, and hopefully we'll talk more about in other podcasts, into regional service. For commercial service.
I did not know about the airport.
Yeah, we have an airport. We own it. It's actually physically in the town of Stratford because Bridgeport's geographically small. We're 17 square miles, which is small if you know anything about geography for cities. So it's a lot of people to pack into a small area. But we own an airport. I forgot how many acres it is, maybe 400. I don't know how many acres it is. But it's located physically in the town of Stratford. So we're working with our partner.
What kind of flights would come out of there? Would it be
like they used to have commercial flights. I used to fly to Washington, D.C. out of there. Similar to New Haven, actually almost identical would be the type of service you'd see right away, which I think includes at least Chicago and Florida. So it could be robust. It's never had the political unity with the town of Stratford, the city of Bridgeport, and the state of Connecticut to make it happen, but I think there's a real opportunity there. So when we talk about to be discussed in the future legacies, the airport is possibly one of them. So having said all that, talked about history and then kind of identifying our dots of progress, the city's kind of the transformation, not only from that whole flashback to the neighborhoods with the Jersey barriers, but to, you know, bringing in world famous entertainers and music to becoming dubbed by, you know, credible critics as the music and entertainment capital of Connecticut. So that type of transformation from, you know, that crime-related identity to talking to people from all over, but heavily from Fairfield County and Westchester County and other parts of Connecticut coming to Bridgeport as their venue for entertainment and restaurants and the like is a huge transformation. I always like to end it, though, with there's always more work to be done. You can never give up on your challenges to make sure that people not only are safe but feel safe. More housing has to be developed. We've got to commit, as we have, I think, with a partnership on education. And the economic development waterfront is leading the way, I think, to what people are seeing as the city transforming. And it's fun to be a part of.
And it definitely goes back to what we were talking about, legacy, too, because people's experiences in Bridgeport are going to be so much more different than they were in the 90s. And I think if the numbers don't add up and you don't get the story from the numbers, I think that just the changes in how people talk about Bridgeport, that's the true legacy right there.
Well put.
So just to end it all off, what is one thing that you personally love about the city of Bridgeport?
Well, I mean, physically, it's so beautiful, the parks and all that. But if you're from, you don't have to be from Bridgeport. The people, though, I mean, if you take your time to get to meet, whether it's the diversity, but I think there's a real sense of pride, and at least that I get to enjoy with all of our residents. I try to enjoy every part of the city, every neighborhood. Many people see me. I love Seaside Park. That's where I spend my leisure time running, whether it's anywhere along the waterfront, but Beardsley, anywhere. And then, you know, I want to just give one last plug. We're broadcasting from this podcast as part of the Bridgeport Library System. Mm-hmm. Under-realized what an asset this is. People don't know what we have, not only at our branches, but at our main branch, the library. And kudos to all that make sure that we're able to have this podcast here at the Bridgeport Public Library. Mm-hmm. But all that the library does for our citizens as well.
Well, thank you so much, actually, for that, because there are so many services.
You said you're the greatest, didn't you?
I did say I was the greatest. I can now say that I'm the greatest podcasting librarian in Bridgeport. We'll have to see about Connecticut if I can get the right endorsements.
I like it.
But it is really incredible, I think, the amount of work that we do for the citizens and residents of Bridgeport. And, you know, my goal is just to make sure that we continue to let people to know what we do so that people can come in here and get what they need. And that's really what I'm here for, right? It's to help make the lives of the citizens of Bridgeport so much better than they were before I started here. So.
That's exactly what I do. So. To be continued. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.